you like conversation on a variety of topics? Feel like no one wants to talk about the things that interest you? Tired of only hearing the same political, sports, or catastrophe talk? Yeah, we feel that way too. Join two high-functioning geeks as they discuss just about anything under the sun. We can't tell you what we'll be talking about each week because we don't know where our brains will take us. It will be an interesting conversation, though, so hang on and join us. Here comes the Relentless Geekery.
Okay. So now we're really starting because I just saw it go to zero again. And right. You can hear me and I can hear you. Let's try this. Okay.
Yeah. Fun. How you doing, Alan?
Good.
You were good until about 10 to 10, right?
Well, yeah. Like it's funny, you know, since we're only doing this once a week, we really do have lots of other life that happens besides this. And I don't remember changing anything, but it really is possible that as of last Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I had to do something that was, I don't know, hooking up another peripheral or something that just doesn't come to mind, going to a different app that needs different settings. And so I keep thinking that I just left it exactly as it was. It's kind of like when you come back in a room and like everything should be on the table just where I left it, but then you're not the only one in the house. And so people move things around. It's like, where's my thing?
Right. So,
I
know with all the different podcasts, or not podcasts, but all the meetings I'm getting on with Zoom and GoToMeeting and this, that, and the other thing. Sometimes I use my mic on the headphones. Sometimes I use this mic. So there's so many things that change.
Exactly.
You're right.
And now that I think of it, like I belong to a Deep Thoughts discussion group on Wednesday nights, and it's also in Zoom. So I figure that everything is going to be the same. But if there's anything about how they have it configured that affects what I then use Zencastr for, do you know what I mean? It's like sometimes, and I don't like the idea of this, I keep thinking that how you have set your machine up stays, but sometimes they give people the ability to alter others' settings like we do, muting and unmuting microphones. And if she has the ability to say, you know, wow, Al, you're sounding echoey, I'm going to do something, and it's, I don't think it can affect my sound settings. Anyway,
we're here.
They're invading my sovereignty, Stephen. My machine is not my own. I can't stand it.
So, free Dobby. Free
exactly. All right. So let's see. What do we want to talk about this week? We had a whole bunch of good brainstorming.
Where do you want to start? You mentioned a few things. I had a couple things. What do you feel like beginning?
Because it's relatively firm in my mind. My wife just had a birthday.
Happy birthday, Colleen.
I will pass that along. It's funny. We've gotten really good at doing birthdays where we take the day off always for each other's birthday and we like play hooky and go do things. And it's very, in the past has been very cool to be like, hey, we're at the museum and nobody else is here, or at the zoo, or just taking a hike and stuff. And nowadays that isn't necessarily the benefit you get. Nobody's there anyway. And a lot of those things aren't even open. So instead of going to play mini golf or something, we went for a nice walk. Cleveland Metro Parks system just put out the, you know, top 31 hikes, you know, based on, walker voting and maybe some rangers and stuff like that. And so we like lists. And so we said, let's go to every one of those 31 hikes. It'll take us all over the Emerald Necklace, which is the nice name they give for the system of parks and reservations that are all around Cleveland. And we picked, like, hey, how about a 3 to 5 mile one or something like that? And so we went and had nice time together. And as you might imagine, we were 20% of the people on the trail were wearing masks. And I know that we're outside, and I know that the opportunity because of airflow and so forth is low. But nonetheless, when you're on a small path and you have to pass by each other and people aren't wearing a mask, it's I just wanted this to be easy and non-nerve-wracking and out in nature. And instead, you get the heebie-jeebies because you're huffing and puffing a little bit more. There was elevation gain and loss. We went to the Brecksville Reservation and a thing called, I think, Copper Creek Gorge. And as you might imagine, near a gorge, you have to get up to the top of it to look into it, or down to the bottom to be near the water. And so people are just like kind of going to a chorale concert, singing and spewing more droplets. Just hope that out of all the times that we've been very, very careful, and even here with our own mask, then you get home, it's like, well, I probably should pop in the shower and clean this mask, burn it maybe, because Oh, well. So,
well, there was a news thing I saw the other day that it's confirmed that squirrels have caught the coronavirus. So
I think I saw plague as well. And, you know, that they've often had, like, mice have the hantavirus down in the Southwest and stuff. So we have to hope that they don't jump. You know, one of the biggest things that we've seen in the last 20, 30 years is that weird ability of swine flu and various things to jump from animal to human populations. And it used to be you kind of couldn't get hoof and mouth disease. You could get rabies, but the barriers, the lines between speciation of diseases are kind of blurring. And that's what's like, this one came from bats. I don't know that I have bats roaming around my neighborhood and flying into my house, but that's up here near Lake Erie. That's not the case down in
we've got Texas, bats here. South.
Oh, so there it is. See, I,
wow. So, besides the doom and gloom stuff,
right.
What'd you get her? What was she happy with?
Yeah. You know, Colleen and I, of course, we found each other. You know, one of the joys of being geeky is that you find other geeks sometimes, and she doesn't have the same geek expressions that I do. So she's not necessarily as much into the science fiction or the comic books, but part to me, geeks isn't those things. It's like having that unbridled enthusiasm for the things that you're into. You know, I think that's like a cool Simon Pegg definition, if I remember right. And so she's always liked the Laura Ingalls Wilder Little House on the Prairie books. You know, and she knows a ton about it. One day she'll give a little lecture and all the other people that grew up with those books and have them as their heroes. She'll delight the room with how much she's come to know about that. We actually, on a couple of our driving vacations, you know, we make a point of including, let's go to this cool natural feature. Let's go to this fun literary. Hey, where did Mark Twain live? That kind of stuff. Well, we've actually been to like the house where Laura Ingalls Wilder wrote many of the Little House on the Prairie.
That's cool.
And into some of the cities that were featured. Like, you know, there's no reason to go to Desmet, is it Minnesota? No, it's North Carolina. No, what am I saying? North Dakota, except that it's got a relation to the Little House on the Prairie. So in the same way that I have enthusiasms for certain authors or types, she does. And every year I try to find, is there anything new about Laura Ingalls Wilder? You would think that, you know, she was writing 100 years ago and actually only died in 1959, which boggles my mind that she was around that long.
Right.
But there really still seems to be some love and appreciation and scholarship that's going on. And so I just got her the latest one where someone collected a whole bunch of, here are postcards and letters and you're like personal effects, if you will, that she exchanged within her family or with other people. And they collected a bunch of them together and she just drinks that in. She loves it, going back to those pioneer times and stuff. And she's also big times into Kurt Vonnegut. And so occasionally I've found a book where, all right, they mined the Kurt Vonnegut world a little bit more and found some miscellaneous, you know, he really has, so far as I know, published all of his long and short stories, but they keep on finding interesting things. So that's part of what I try to get her is those little things that you don't see them on big bestseller lists,
but they're
very much to her taste. You know what I mean? We got her a new, so we still actually do listen to, stereos have come a long way. And nowadays it's not a boombox. It really is. You can play CDs, but you can also, of course, attach it to the net. And so I have a vast music library and she can tap into that. But we had just talked about, some of the music that you put on when you are, oh no, too much doom and gloom. What's going to make it better? How about some Weird Al Yankovic, which we've talked about, we both love.
And he has a great birthday song that I play for all my kids on their birthday.
There you go. Happy birthday to you. Yep. Exactly. So I found, it's kind of funny, I have all of the Weird Al Yankovics, but she also doesn't only, even though she's most of the time in the house nowadays because of our coronavirus situation, she's often on the road. You know, what she does is a relationship manager for big retirement plans. And so she likes to listen to CDs in the car. And so I have, I got some Weird Al Yankovic CDs so that she'd have the portable version. And I don't know, to geek it up for a minute, they've made it so you really can have music everywhere. But if you haven't pre-thought of what you might want to listen to and then download it while you have not Wi-Fi, but crappy signal, it's amazing how quickly that eats up your data on your various different phone plans. So funny, you don't need to do any of that if you have a CD that you can just pop in the slot in your car.
Wow, just what we talked about, you know, having the actual CD. That's crazy.
Exactly. So I got her some Weird Al Yankovic CDs, and that when she talked about what kinds of things she likes from him, I got like the Polka Party one, I got the Dare to Be Stupid, which is an older one but has a whole bunch of really good songs on it and stuff like that. Also, we really like an author, Bill Bryson. I'm not sure if we've talked about him before.
No, nope, doesn't ring a bell.
Yeah, he became known for doing tourism books, and part of the interesting take he had on it was he was wandering around the United States as a Britisher, you know, an English person going, not like we know all about the United States, but more like, what if I was looking at this place with new eyes? And kind of like some of the quirkiness, the weirdness of that Americans all take for granted. But, you know, it's not everybody has different names for pop versus soda versus Coke in their own country. And, like right. that. And he's very good about commenting on that. So I'm trying to think like visit to a small island or, you know, I'm here from a small island. I'm being weird today about having exact titles, but not only has he written travel books, but he's one of these authors that really is great at applying that same, maybe let's call it a technique of looking at a particular topic, a body of knowledge, and being able to present it in a very simple but deep way all at the same time. So I got a couple books from him for her, one called The Body, that pretty much says, here's how your body works. And, you know, not okay. in the only the anatomy way and not in the, you know, where's the soul way, the mystical way, but just kind of like walk through. And another one called At Home, where it's like, why are our houses as they are? How did we get the pretty standard thing? Every place has a kitchen and a bathroom and a bedroom and maybe a living space. And we used to have parlors, but now we don't. And why is that? And you know what I mean? He's really good at taking a investigatory stance on it and a historic stance and an amused stance. And so I got her a couple of things like that. And nice. One of the joys of having someone who loves to read is that there's an unending number of books, but when you find just the right one that's just to their taste, or like, oh, I love this guy, but I didn't know this one was out there. And it's like, yeah, I got in there early. You right. know,
yeah, that's nice.
So that kind of stuff, you know, and as usual, we have a little, you wrap all your gifts up and you put them on our one coffee table and you take your time opening them. And also, and here, this is the final big thing. We've gotten a fun thing. She dresses beautifully, and I'm more of a casual guy, but we've discovered that we both like have everybody again in the geekery world likes t-shirts that say something on them. And I tend to avoid the more like, I don't want to swear in public. So, right. And actually I'm very good at swearing in public, but I don't want my t-shirt to do that for me. I want to choose the context and the people that I'm talking to as to whether I'm going to say that. Having said that, I don't know, that's not meant to sound too weirdly moralistic. We really like, if you're going to back a team, like she always wears, when she goes to her conferences, often something that has a Cleveland basis because she's proud to be from Cleveland and announces that. But there's also all kinds of, as you might imagine, AAA, AA, single A ball clubs that have the most amusing team names in the world. Yes. And so Banana Slugs and Zippers and whatever else it might be. And she was driving one time where she heard a radio announcer doing a ball game. And it was, the most productive Rumble Pony of tonight has been, you know, Bill Bronson. And it's like, Rumble Ponies, what a great team name. And yeah. Another thing that we're really good at is you listen always to what they're saying, and then you make a little mental note of like, she was really amused by that, and it's only November and her birthday is July. If I remember this, she's going to be just so tickled that I picked this one little ort out of conversation. So
what I tend to do is get the things right away because I'll forget about them.
Okay.
And then I hide them in the closet.
Yes.
And then totally forget about them. We have pulled so many gifts out of the closet. I've given kids birthday gifts like 3 months after the birthday.
Stash place or something, you know, yes. And you hope that you'll remember to go to the stash place and say, oh, yeah, she'll really like this. Thank God I found it again, you know.
Right. Oh, hey, this was from like 5 years ago. Well, her birthday's in 3 months. I'll give it to her then.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I already got her Rumble Ponies a while back. In this case, it was the Yard Goats.
Wow. Okay.
They're from Hartford, and it just – they have a fun logo where it's like a goat chewing on a baseball bat, you know, that kind of stuff. And I not only got her the t-shirt, I actually got her what they had on their website was a mystery box where you not only got the t-shirt, you got like some trading cards of like double A ball players who you've never heard of before, and a little plush toy doggy wearing a Yard Goat's little shirt, you know? So it's just, nice. It's silly. And yet that's part of what being having fun. He's never losing that childlike silliness. You know what I mean?
You can take the baseball cards and put them in the spokes of your bike.
See, exactly. And actually, these are like fancicated. They're all laminated and they're like meant to be lasted. You know, they're going to be tradable and stuff. And so it's like, I guess if it really, maybe lightning will strike that without us knowing it, you know, Jim Johnson has suddenly, he moves his way up through AA to AAA to the show. And then all of a sudden, wow, I got an original of this guy before anybody knew that he was going to bat 600. You know what I mean?
Right. So. And then you can take that, you can sell the card, take the money and invest it.
So. Exactly. That's and by the, so very bad day 2 days ago in the market, but I have doubled the market.
Wow.
I have my initial investments from January of last year. I've more than doubled. I kind of can't believe it, you know, so just not to be braggy, but it's amazing. If you're just making more than, you know, any of the indices, S&P and NASDAQ and stuff like that, you're making 8% or 20 or 33, or like NASDAQ has had a very good run lately because everybody's into tech, everybody's fleeing other things. And nonetheless, I picked just the ones that everybody wants to run into, I guess. And so, so it's really helping, you know, when we think of security and getting ready for retirement, it's really nice to have your investments doing well. So that's kind of fun.
And not to jump back on topics real quick. You mentioned Laura Ingalls Wilder. I used to love those books. I read all of them and they're great books, but I've heard that they have this award, the Laura Ingalls Writers Award or Story Award or something like that.
Yeah.
And they were thinking of changing the name and dropping it from her because she wrote about Native Americans, not very highly and things like that. And it's like, well, hold on again, this is history. This was the time period. Yeah. And to ignore that and to pretend it didn't exist or even condemn her as a writer for writing that way, I think that's, we're missing kind of the point and we're getting a little too overboard on things. People need to soften up a little bit.
I really do agree. It seems like an incredible overreaction to apply modern sensibilities to everything going back in time. And instead of trying to understand why that was that way back then and that we've grown since then, you know what I mean? We really have become more civilized and more accepting of difference and so forth, but to try to eradicate it or to try to make it that they were bad back then. So, and unfortunately, who are the victims of that? It's Laura Ingalls Wilder. It's Mark Twain. It's Mel Brooks. I just did a post on Facebook because we've been trying to watch more funny stuff in order to keep our spirits up as the you know, the coronavirus lingers. And so we just watched Blazing Saddles and it holds up really, really well. It's an hilarious movie. And yet, boy, it really does make fun of all different kinds of stereotypes. But and maybe this is what I always think about is it isn't the presence of the thing. It's how the thing is treated. There's always context. And so someone commented, and I already thought this, you know, if you look at everybody in that movie that really is the harshest about the use of those terrible words, they're the biggest jerks in the movie. They're not the admirable ones. They're the idiots. They're the, you know, so it isn't that Mel Brooks was saying, hey, everybody learn to use these stereotypes and all that kind of stuff. He was pretty much saying, and that's, you know, 40, 50 years ago, even back then we knew they were jerks. You know, you can't.
And I've heard some authors saying that they've written a book and they have characters in it that are racist or characters that are not nice to women and things like that. And then they get completely slammed for it. People just calling them all sorts of names and demanding the book be taken off the shelves, rewritten. It's like, well, hold on, look at what they're writing. There are people in the world like that. And they're including that character in there. That's not saying they approve of it. That's not saying that's how they think. It's a character. Look at that. That's great that you're upset about it, but it's a character representing what some people in the real world are like.
Exactly. People are losing discernment. You know what I mean? They don't get that any appearance is not like, for instance, and this is kind of a dilemma to me. So if you put a character in a book or a movie that uses patois, you know, sounding like people of that country, then you're it's as if you're being, you're stereotyping them and as if you're making fun of them, but you're not, you're actually adding authenticity. And far more inauthentic or far more rude to me would be, oh, everybody speaks the Queen's English, no matter what country they're from, no matter what time period they're from. And like, wow, that's cultural imperialism, isn't it? If you act as if nobody spoke with an accent, there was no such thing as pidgin English or any of the other dialectes, and part of what you commit to as an author is creating place, you know, that you can transport the reader to a certain time. And well, they don't all talk modern. They talk right. like they might have talked at the time. And we know enough about how they spoke that you can include old words and old ways of speaking. I don't know, that is an overreaction in what you just said.
It would be like just recently they had Little Women remade the movie. Mm-hmm. And in today's world, and I could see the executives going, okay, this looks like a great movie, but we really can't have all four of the sisters be white. We need to have different races. Okay. Well, hold on a minute. That kind of changes things.
Exactly. So, jarringly, you know, different. Exactly.
Yes. Yeah. Now, am I all for the maybe Native American version of Little Women or I think that would be wonderful. I mean, you remember clear back in the day, The Wizard of Oz, Michael Jackson and what's her name did The Wiz.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, from Motown. What's her name?
How about Diana Ross, maybe?
Diana Ross, thank you. Yes.
Okay, yes. So.
Yeah, so I think that's great, but that doesn't mean everything has to be, okay, this has to be an all-Black cast. This has to be an all-Asian cast. This has to be an all-Eskimo penguin cast.
Yeah.
I mean, I love the mixing up.
Yeah, this is such an interesting, tricky issue. Like they had, you know, my experience... So to go to the other end of the spectrum, once in a while, you not only have it, that things are unacceptable, that they're actually censored, that they try to make those things cease to not exist. And I have met zero censors that are not exactly the people that you shouldn't have doing it. You know what I mean? People that are like volunteering to be the censor, they often have such an agenda, such a closed mind as to how the world is that you really shouldn't give any of those people that job. And so there's all kinds of things going on in the world nowadays about how you're not allowed to say and do certain things. And I guess to be geeky about it for a minute, you know, logical fallacy wise, there's a thing called dichotomous thinking where it's one or zero. It's yes or no. It's just either end of the spectrum. And what in the world is like that? Very little. Almost everything is complex and messy and a whole spectrum of various different things. And so like when you do think of all the ways that realizes in the world that have made it worse. Mandatory sentencing where, you know, you either get 0 or 30 years. It's like, what about extenuating circumstances? What about everything that goes into a sense of appropriate justice when somebody has done something wrong? It isn't. And well, boy, that's, again, we have so many topics. It could be, that's another six podcasts. To have the people that are about that, like nowadays, a term I've heard is cancel culture, that if somebody does something wrong, they're like, they must cease to exist. And I find it real hard to say, wow, so this guy might have made a mistake, and it might even be a big mistake, but they've also contributed to the world in a big way. And so I'm still watching Woody Allen movies. I think that some of the things he's done are really deplorable, really terrible. And yet, to separate the artist from that, you have to. You kind of, I don't want to say that he doesn't exist anymore. Right. And I'm not a champion for, but I think that's happened to Bill Cosby or Louis C.K. And we can start to name the people that they really did hilarious, funny, heartfelt, human albums before we found out that Bill Cosby also really had a problem with drugging people.
And right.
Again, no support, but I don't think, and I guess now it isn't even that they wait for them to have a body of work and you have a comparison. People make one mistake and they're immediately like, get them, lynch them. Yeah. And you kind of, know anybody who, you know, who cast the first stone that is so perfect that they should be the ones volunteering to say those things.
And worse is a lot of times some things are taken out of context. They'll take one thing, you know, if just as an example, I don't think this has happened, but it's the type of thinking is somebody does a Broadway play or even a local musical theater play, you know, just in your local community, and they're playing maybe a racist bigot like Archie Bunker or something like that. They're playing that part. Yes. And 30, 40 years later, they've become a super huge actor, superstar, but somebody from that community gets mad at them and pulls up the recording from this old play and says, look, listen to what they're saying. And they play the line. And then suddenly everyone's jumping on the bandwagon and crucifying this person, ruining their life. Yeah. But it was completely taken out of context without the full story. That I think is part of the problem is people just jump on the bandwagon without understanding. You know, there's a Safe Auto commercial about auto insurance for the rest of us. And all these people are yelling and protesting. And one guy goes, hey, what's this about? And the other guy goes, I don't know, something about auto insurance. And they're just joining in and protesting.
Right.
And it's funny.
They show that kind of rabid going through the crowd type thing, you know. Yes. What I mean? So, you know, and so it's kind of funny because things are messy and complex. What also makes me sad, however, is there are some people that you really want them to be the characters that they play, that they've been in heroic roles or whatever else it might be. And then once in a while, the mask slips and they reveal themselves. Maybe they really are a bad guy. You know what I mean? If you find that it's not a single thing, but it's a pattern of bad behavior, I find it, I don't know, I don't want to give any more money to Bill Cosby. I don't want to give any more money to Mel Gibson. I don't want to, there are some people that have, they've just been so bad that I kind of vote with my dollars or I vote with my attention and, and I don't know. And everybody has their different things that they think are bad. And so it's not that my sensibilities have to be anybody else's, but when you see a video of someone got drunk and, you know, in vino veritas, right, you know, that they told the truth for once instead of being very guarded. And then they go off on this misogynistic or racist or whatever rant. And it's like, oh, I just don't want to think you have that in you. I don't want to think right. You're really like that. And yet there it is. Ugh.
And so. One of them that I kind of get behind is Johnny Depp and the problems he's had. Okay. Because his now ex-wife came out, oh my God, he beats me. He does this and all sorts of things. And everybody's like condemning him and criticizing right. him and on and on. And then, hey, wait a second.
Not true.
It wasn't him. It really was her. She's completely lying.
Right.
And I'm behind that because I had that problem when I was going through my divorce. So I can behind that, you know. Yeah. But that's the issue. People just jump on without the whole story.
Yeah. And social media, like there's so much. It's that. Don't you want to like know both sides of the story? Don't you want to like do a little bit of research? No, most people don't. They're happy to read the sensationalistic headline and they're happy, like you said, to be part of the crowd that's just, you know, get the axes and torches out immediately. Right. And I try not to.
My opinion, I think a lot of those people do it because they feel so horrible in their own lives. My life sucks. I go to work, I have bills, I come home and I just, my life is terrible, blah, blah, blah. Right. So I'll make myself feel better by cutting someone else down.
Going on this crusade because, or something like that. That might be, you know, it.
So you know, we kind of danced around the subject, but you mentioned Bill Cosby, a couple of funny guys. What are you guys are listening to a lot? What are you listening to? What are you going? I know because you like to go to comedy clubs and stuff and you haven't been able to do that. You know,
that really, it's our favorite night out. You know what I mean? Stand-up comedy or improv or things like that. I love seeing people that are that witty and that sharp, smart, quick, that they write good material or that they're very good at, you know, handling hecklers or whatever else it might be. And an overall thing was, I think you hear more truth told in like an hour and a half of stand-up comedy than you hear in all the spin-doctored statements from politicians and businessmen and stuff like that. And so we have a great comedy club right here in Cleveland called Hilarities. You know, the owner is very good at getting all the good guys in. And that's one of the things we have absolutely missed the most while we've been in lockdown is you can't go to a comedy club that are automatically kind of like you cram as many people there as you can. You make sure they have a 2-drink minimum and it's a guy with a mic that is, you know, everybody's kind of breathing on each other. But having said that, we have some of our best times that Colleen and I have ever had together is going to a comedy club and seeing like, Bill Burr or Jake Johansson or some people we've lost, John Panette or Richard Jenny. And for that hour and a half that it's just wonderful to have a good belly laugh. It's wonderful to be surprised. You know what I mean? That's so much of what a comedy is kind of that tension and release. They set something up as going a certain way and then they surprise you. There really are, to kind of dovetail to what we were talking about, there's great insult comics. You know what I mean? Even there's comics that's like, oh, I don't know that I should be hearing this.
Comedy makes you uncomfortable sometimes.
Exactly. A lot of how comics describe their work is they see that there's a line somewhere and they're going to help you step across that just a little bit, maybe a lot, because something to be found in being more accepting of humanity has all kinds of good and bad to it. There really are all kinds of good and bad thoughts. There's all kinds of good and bad actions, but there's humor to be found in anything. And so this isn't meant to like be crazy, but every time that you hear someone get challenged, well, tell me a rape joke, tell me a Holocaust joke. And it's like, good Lord, those are just the most touchy, horrible subjects in the world. And yet I've seen skilled comics tell those things and you laugh because they really are good at pointing out that even in that, there's humanity and there's surprise and there's, you laugh at the people that think it isn't funny or what, or you know what I mean? Or that it is only funny or that it's not funny at all. And you kind of laugh at the extremes that people take on. So,
and comedy and sci-fi are like two of the art forms that can do modern politics or religion or some other newsworthy thing and get away with it. You know, exactly. Science fiction can approach the old Star Trek episode with the guys that were half white, half black, but it was like reversed and they were enemies. Yes. You know, there's the racial problem right there, but it got on TV at the time because it was sci-fi and, oh, that's different.
Exactly.
And,
that.
And comedy kind of does that same line at times.
Mm-hmm. In fact, so like we've seen many, we've seen hundreds of different stand-up comics. We've been to wonderful comedy festivals in Toronto and Montreal and Boston and stuff like that. And one of the things you'll see is that there's regional variations. You know, like sometimes you don't get all the jokes because you are not aware of particular Canadian issues, if you will, or something like that. Right. But one of the most fun things is we love seeing comics we've never seen before. And it's a little bit maybe like catch as catch can. They're not always great. But when they're great, it's just so much like, okay, so now we've seen him in Toronto. Let's see if we can get him to come to Cleveland. Every time that you fill out one of those little forms as to get free tickets, you get to say, who else would you like to see here? And so, of course, it's not really true, but we like to think that because from the start we said, get Tommy John again. He's wonderful. And then when he eventually shows up, it's like our nagging campaign finally worked. they got Tommy John again. So we've had then, and I don't know, there's something about this social media world is you kind of like to be in early and be able to say, hey, you've never heard of this guy, but believe me, he's really good. You should seek him out. I love that thing of here's a movie, a book, a TV show that it isn't that popular, but it's got some real cool, quirky, good thing to it. And even if it's not super popular, that also means it's not lowest common denominator. It means it's interesting. And I love that when we find a comedian that I can just say, you know, you're not going to be prepared for what he does. We still love Emo Phillips. He's been doing things for a long time.
The nerd comedian.
Absolutely. He's really got, you know, like he seems so uncomfortable on stage, but it's only an act. It's a character that he plays. Yeah. Bobcat Goldthwait used to be the same way where it's gets like nervous looking at him.
Now he does Bigfoot movies.
Yeah, honestly, and he's a great director. We've seen a couple of Shakes the Clown. I'm trying to think what else he's done that like when you find out he directed is like, well, that's a whole nother skill. I didn't know that the Bobcat had. How cool is that? Right.
And so we mentioned Bill Cosby earlier and that particular situation really makes me sad because I've always loved Bill Cosby's comedy. Me and one of my friends used to just lay in his room on the floor listening to Bill Cosby and laughing our butts off.
Why Is There Air and to Russell, my brother, whom I slept with and Wonderfulness. Honestly, some of the first albums that I ever specifically collected an artist. I would go to the record stores and say, is there any Bill Cosby that I don't have yet?
Right. And I love that story of comedy. A lot of comedians do the one-liners one after the other. And that's got its place and there's some really good ones. But I've always loved that story where the whole story comes out and every piece of it, there's a climax of comedy at points.
Exactly.
And one of them I've discovered that's similar is Stuart McLean. Do you know him?
I don't know him. Thank you for this name. Okay. All right. Stuart McLean.
If you like Bill Cosby, you really should look up Stuart McLean, UART. He's Canadian and he did a radio show very much like Garrison Keillor, where it had artists and some stories. But the highlight of the show was he told a story of these characters he created, but it was always a like mishap day in the life of story.
Okay.
And there are tons of these out there. You can look for them. He is fantastic. Me and the kids listened to like 40 hours of him once on our one vacation, just in the car, laughing our butts off. And the kids still reference it.
That's very cool.
And there's one about Pollyanna's Christmas party. And we listen to that on the Wednesday night before Thanksgiving because it kicks off our holiday season. That's and it's like a cool ritual. It is hilarious. We quote it all year long. will say things.
Look up Stuart. It becomes McLean. Like family language. You know what I mean? Yeah. Those little references. Exactly. That's cool.
Yeah. So you should look him up. He's got some good stuff out there.
It's, you know, another, not only I love getting those references of like, check him out. I love when somebody gives me something. It's like what you just said, there's 40 hours. It's like, how have I never heard of this guy? He doesn't have like one album out. He's got TV shows, 40 hours of albums, whatever else. So I love, not only now I have something to look into, but I have like a whole mind that I can start digging into. Yeah. When a friend told me about the Prey books by John Sanford, and I never read a single one of them, and there's like, I think 30, and it's just, when you try one and they're good, it's like, oh, you've given me such a gift. Now I get to go to the used bookstores and I get to hit Amazon and I get to like, I want to read them in order. So I have to like do a little treasure hunt.
It's gotta be in order.
But it's such a cool thing. Like, how have I not heard Colleen and I, whenever we read a word, you know, we play Scrabble, we have extensive vocabularies, and like provably so. When I've taken tests, I really have, besides maybe like medical and legal where they're very specific, I really have a huge vocabulary. So then when you find a new word, it's like, how did I make it to 60 and never have heard this before? And it's like, it's not a Dr. Seuss word where you think somebody made it up. It's just, I never in all my reading and all my conversation didn't bump into this. It's a gift. It's just a cool thing. Like, well, this just magically appeared. And I think we've laughed about this before. That word that you've never heard of before, then you hear it like three times in 4 days. The universe reinforces it for you. You know what I mean? Remember this.
Yeah. And I still check out the word of the day every now and then. We'll get a lull in the family conversation. I'll pull out my phone and say, okay, here's a word for everybody.
Exactly. Or propinquity, you know.
the Mensa Quest trivia. You know, I'll pull up a good trivia question that we've come up.
Exactly. I know there's whole calendars of like old time language that we've let go away, but then, or Shakespearean insult generator type things, you know, ye poppin' Jay, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yes.
A comedian that I would recommend that does the storytelling that you just mentioned, Mike Birbiglia, is really good at that. It isn't like setup and you know, punchline. It's very good, the stories of the situations that he's found in his life. And there's a little bit of absurdity, a little bit of self-deprecation, but it's just, they're so engaging. He's really good at spinning a tale like that.
Yeah, I actually haven't heard that name in quite a while. It kind of slipped. I'll have to go and revisit.
Yeah, I think he's got a couple specials out on Netflix. And I think he's also done a couple movies now that it's not about him. He plays a character, but good stuff. Good stuff. Yeah. So,
okay. Well, that's on my list. Yeah. So we've got something new. Yeah. So, you got something?
No, actually, you know, besides the whole stand-up thing, because we can't be doing it while this is going on. Right. There's so many good. We just watched a Monty Python documentary called Monty Python Almost the Truth. And it was by a guy that you just know was so much a fan that he was able to gain their confidence in all the surviving Pythons. Graham Chapman is dead, but all the other five were around. And they gave such wonderful interviews, and they talked about the old days and the byplay between the various different writing teams. And they talked about, you know, how they got from Holy Grail to Life of Brian to Meaning of Life and the various different movies. And just, it was really fun to see any Monty Python again. They're one of those that's really stood the test of time. They're still so witty and so funny and just high quality throughout. You know, in a half an hour show, you got 35 minutes of laughter. You know what I mean? That's just amazing.
Kind of tying back to what we were talking about earlier, it's not insulting other people. It's not specifically picking on this or that race or anything like that, and it's still hilarious.
Exactly. Or if it does, it's for effect. You know what I mean? There's someone who's making that derogatory statement, it's like, he's the worst jerk in the scene. He's not the one that you admire, you know, that kind of thing. So please go ahead.
We're both gonna go ahead. You go.
So one of the joys, obviously, of having Netflix, Amazon Prime, and so forth, you know, there's so much out there. So we just recently rewatched Airplane. We rewatched, you know, a couple things that we have liked before. And so, like, the first Airplane, I had actually seen. So there's, you know, a writing team of like Zucker, Abrahams, and Zucker that did that movie. And they went on to do Police Squad and various other things. But they had done even older things like Kentucky Fried Movie, and I think also Groove Tube, if I remember right. And they're much. they're much rawer, they're much ruder, but they're still hilarious. And so if you seek those out, you'll be able to see where they got that comic sensibility. And they're like, they just throw so many jokes on the screen. They're going to make you laugh somehow. You know what I mean? It's puns, right. It's visual stuff, it's insults, whatever else it might be. There's one movie called Tunnel Vision that I know I saw in college that it was along those same lines as GrooveTube and Kentucky Fried Movie. It's not a one single plot line. It's a series of sketches, but hilarious. And that's one of the ones that's been in my unknown availability queue in Netflix for probably 20 years. Somebody has it, but who knows what rights battle there is going on. No one, you know, there's some problem with putting it back out. Maybe there's performances by early stars that's saying, oh, I hate that work. You know, Jerry Lewis has a couple movies that he's taken off the market because he doesn't like how they turned out. It might be something like that. But when I finally see Tunnel Vision, I hope that it is as funny as I thought it was in college, or really might be, oh boy, I was in college. Right. I must have been, you know, a different me back then, you know. So
some of those. And I mean, you mentioned Netflix, and that's another thing we've talked about is catching up on shows, watching shows.
Yeah.
And it's so everything keeps changing. And I don't think the kids realize this, but I remember 20 years ago or so, 15, when Netflix was young, still starting out, the DVDs was the thing. Mm-hmm. And we still get DVDs because like 98% of anything that's ever been out there is on DVD on Netflix. You can rent it.
Right.
Same as going to the library. If you have a really good library system, like I know you do up in Cuyahoga County,
exactly,
you can get just about anything that's been on DVD. And Netflix, when they came out with the streaming, had just about everything. It was Netflix, and then Hulu came in with like more recent TV shows. But then everything went to Netflix eventually, and great, everyone got rid of cable, and we got Netflix. Now, Netflix really has their own stuff, and not quite as much of the other stuff, from what I see.
All the various different media combines said, you know, we need to work on our own collections and especially have exclusives, because that's the only way that we're going to beat somebody like Netflix that seems to have everything. Is we're going to have, you know, Disney has all of the Marvel collection, you know, HBO Max has Game of Thrones. There's various different
Warner Brothers
library. And it used to be that it wasn't all those walled gardens for the various different sets of things. And so I personally hate it. I don't want to subscribe to six different services. I really want one or two Omnis services and one or two infinities that I can choose from. So right now I have Netflix and Amazon Prime, and I'm just so resistant to, even if, I don't know, it seems very reasonable, $5 a month for all the other content.
10 of them.
Yeah, but 10 of those means it's 50 and I'm back up to a big cable bill. I cut the cord specifically to not pay all that money to be able to, and not to be weird, I'm trying to watch less TV, not more. You know what I mean? There's some part of like, get up, go take a walk, read a book. Yep. That maneuvering that's going on for all the negotiation of they're creating original content, they're buying old stuff, and then like BBC, that was all available on Netflix, that went off and had its own thing. So
yes,
oh, my Doctor Who, my Monty Python, all my other, you know,
series. Doctor Who is on HBO Max.
There you can see. So, and eventually they start to say, well, we don't have to have an absolute exclusive. We'll have an alliance. And then you need a scorecard. So one of the joys Roku is really good about, you can look for anything and it will actually take you through the various different services and say it's available for free if you're a Hulu Plus customer, it's available for $3.99 for viewing if you're on, you know what I mean? They'll really, and you, so you, we, it would be, it's nice to know that it's all available out there and that it's just, okay, if I did that a lot and I started to see which is the one that it always seems I can get it for the least expensive or it's always available, that's the services that I'm going to go with.
Right.
So we'll see.
And so like we were talking at Netflix, all the CW shows with all the DC characters and that.
And you just said you saw a great.
I'll come back to that in a moment. But Netflix does get those shows. So you can watch all that stuff on Netflix, but like a season later. And that's fine.
Yeah.
Except for now, Batwoman is only on HBO Max, not on Netflix.
Okay.
So if you want to watch Batwoman, you got to do HBO. And they do have Doctor Who. Plus, they're getting all the other DC stuff like Doom Patrol and Titans and that.
And if you're a comic book guy, I really do want to be seeing Doom Patrol and Titans and Batwoman and stuff. And they're not all on Netflix. Exactly.
Right.
So
plus, HBO Max now has their own show for The Watchmen. and you can only get it on Max.
Yeah.
So there's a tempting there. But then you get like CBS. CBS doesn't have their shows everywhere. They want you to get the all access. But what really kind of pisses me off about CBS all access is when you have it and you're paying for it, they still don't give you all seasons of all shows. Sometimes Man. It's only the most recent. And it's like, really? What's the point? Like Big Bang Theory, you couldn't get all the seasons, but that is now on HBO Max.
Wow. So you have to keep track of.
Yeah.
I think I defeat a lot of that by being kind of omnivorous. By that meaning, there's no show that I need to see that particular show so much that I'm going to buy an entire service just to be able to get it. I can kind of outweigh them. And then the difficulty is, you know, when Game of Thrones, I would indeed wait for the DVDs to come out and I'd watch them. But then if it's a year later, spoilers, you already know because everybody talks about it, what's going to happen. And I just kind of accepted that that's my fate. You know, there's no way that I'm going to be able to seal myself off from the world to not know what happened at the end of Game of Thrones in a year between it airing right. and I seeing it. You know,
and here's the interesting thing about that, and I'll push this all the time. Yeah. Just about everything on DVD you can get through most library systems. I mean, where I'm at, I can go to the Cuyahoga and they have lots of stuff. Mm-hmm. And then the Kent Ravenna Library has a lot of stuff. So there's not too many shows or movies that I couldn't rent out of the library if I really wanted. And I'll push that. Anyone listening, go to your library.
Exactly. I do not take anywhere near enough advantage of that. I mean, my library, it literally is like a block and a half away. I can kind of like frisbee a book into the return slot from where I live.
You better record it because I really want to see it.
There we go.
But the interesting thing I heard recently mm-hmm. was from a trusted person that was in the advertising business and was talking to an HBO exec. So this is a personal account. And he was questioning them about why they don't release Game of Thrones specifically to DVD as soon as other people are releasing their shows. Okay. That Game of Thrones is like a year behind on DVD and this, that, or the other thing. And people are asking for it. Why don't you have it? He says, because he's like, and this guy said, because what you do is all these people want the DVD. So instead they go and pirate it. They get it illegally somehow. And, you know, if you came off the DVD, you'd stop that. And he goes, no, actually what we have found is if we wait longer and all those people that go and pirate it start talking about it, we actually sell more DVDs.
Builds demand. Exactly. Yeah. Okay.
And I was like, whoa, they're actually kind of on the sly using the pirating for their benefit. Exactly. And they said it actually helps them. Yeah. So
they used to talk about that often back when music was first being pirated, you know what I mean? There was various different ways of getting thing. Not, you know, nowadays we have Spotify and Apple and various different services that seem to have anything anyway. But back then it was, you kind of did it on the sly. And but what they did from studies was most of the time, enough of the time, people downloaded music, single tracks, fell in love with it enough that then they'd go and buy the CD. And whatever mm-hmm. that numbers were, that it was actually, you shouldn't look at pirating as theft. It's like loss leader. You sell something for a low cost, meaning free, but then you actually do get a sale out of it because that thing is so good that people say, well, now I want all of, you know, Milli Vanilli. I'm just teasing. You know what I mean? It's like that kind of, you know.
That's actually a debate in the author community. People get so hung up on people pirating their books, mm-hmm. and other people are like, look, let them have it because people read it, get interested.
Word of mouth. It builds. Yeah, exactly.
And these books that are pirated, there's like thousands of them. So, you know, if your book's getting discovered just as easily as it is on Amazon or something. So yeah. That's a whole argument there on whether pirating is good. But according to this HBO exec, it is. So
for so many of those things, what I need to see is numbers. You know, there's any number yes. of people that can make a story, a persuasive case for one way or the other. But it's kind of funny. In Mensa just had a thing where they had to talk about risk management. You know, there's certain things that are going on in Mensa that they had to say, are we going to change or continue, or how are we going to handle this? And some part of risk management was people saying, well, it really would be awful if this happened. We have to stop it. And always when I've done business in software and other things for a long time. And risk management is all about what's the chance of something happening and what's the cost if it does happen and what are you willing to pay as an insurance policy or as a preventative to make it so that you don't get the worst of it right. happened and it cost a lot. And that there's no one or zero, again, to go back to dichotomous thinking, there's a whole spectrum of, well, this has a big chance of happening, but even if it happens, it's not that bad. Or
right.
you only have one chance of happening, but someone dies, and so you do something to prevent it. If you can't afford to have this project stop, this person die, whatever. And if you can't put numbers on it, it's not science. Yeah. You know what I mean? Right. There's just guesswork involved.
Let's not bring that argument up right now.
Exactly.
That's been months of argument right there.
Exactly. But that's just, Freakonomics and various different books that have done those kinds of things. If, I don't know if you've read any of those. There's a couple of great books, probably four or five of them now, about Freakonomics, where they look at things in life, social issues, and they say, so how do drug dealers really work? Who really makes the money? What's really going on here?
Oh,
and they kind
cool.
of show, you know, it's very similar to a pyramid scheme. People at the top make a lot of money. All the underlings that want to get to the top, they're all lured by the dangled carrot of you could be the big drug boss one day. But in the meantime, they're taking on all the risk and getting very little of the reward. And so they, for all kinds of different things, they show here's the real factors. If you really try to put numbers on and measure it and interview people and get the truth, that we have all kinds of things that are ideologically presented a certain way, but they don't pass muster when you look at what really happens in the world.
So, and that type of thing is perfect. That's the type of thing we devour.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That sounds good. I've heard of it, seen it, not read it. So yeah. I'm going to have to go check that out.
It's just nice. I don't know. I'm not into every conversation to be right, but once in a while when someone is really bloviating about it's this way and only this way, it's like, well, actually, I read a book that specifically said your numbers don't match up. You know what I mean? That's not how prison sentencing works. That's
and
not
people
how
hate when you do that. They always basically think you're kind of the idiot. So
it depends on how you present it. And I don't know, we've talked about this before. I don't know that I don't need to be right. But I really do have something weird in me that says I can't stand bullies. And so that's where I am at my most contentious is at least taking the air out of them. You know what I mean? So.
Yes. And I think me and Gina pointed this out. I think it's I can't stand stupidity just to be stupid. Yeah. And I think a lot of the arguments you hear people nowadays is like, folks, you're saying this stuff and it makes no sense.
Right.
And it's just.
And saying and it louder doesn't make it more true. Exactly.
Right. So. Exactly. So, okay. So back to the Netflix and the DC and all that. Mm-hmm. And you haven't seen this yet, but you know the story. Okay. The Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Infinite Earths, exactly.
Very famous DC crossover event.
The collapse of the multiverse. Exactly that. You know. Okay.
So the CW shows just explored that over this past season.
Wow.
And every year the shows have been doing a crossover event where all the characters get together.
Exactly.
And so the one from a year and a half ago hinted and led up to the Infinite or the Crisis on Infinite Earths, which okay. is how it should be, really.
So, which are the shows? It's Arrow, Flash, Legends of Tomorrow. I'm trying to, is that all? Am I? What am I? There, okay.
There's five. Arrow, Flash, Batwoman, Legends of Tomorrow. And Supergirl.
Duh. There you go. Of course. Okay. Okay.
Duh. Yeah. So Supergirl's been on a different Earth, and they visited several other Earths.
Okay.
So this one we were excited about, and there was some lead up to it. The first part of the season of Arrow, season 8, was leading up to it, and there were some other hints and all that with the Monitor. I think this is some of the for the comic book person, if you like these characters, if you've watched the CW shows, this was one of the best 5-episode viewings. It was better than
Fantastic.
Some movies I have seen.
Fantastic.
You don't need the high production values always. The special effects are good enough. There's enough action in it, but we've fallen in love with the characters and they just did it so absolutely well. I think now my son would argue that. He's like, well, they didn't do this. I'm like, oh, come on. Right.
If you know the real stuff, then you're like, oh, they left this out. And this was, okay. Yeah.
Well, come on. How big was Crisis back in the 80s with all the crossover books, like 100 books all together if you want everything. So come on. But some of the things I loved about all the DC stuff is they have always tried to get the actors from the old shows in somehow. So there was a Supergirl movie.
Please repeat that because I dropped out with you. Okay.
One of the things they try and do is get actors from the old shows into the new ones.
Exactly. To do a little cameo or another character. That's cool. Yes.
So in The Flash, the 90s TV show Flash, they got that character in as Barry Allen from another Earth.
Okay.
And they used the same actor.
That's fantastic.
In the 80s, there was a Supergirl movie, and the actor who played Supergirl is on Supergirl as Supergirl's mother.
Mother. Okay.
So they always have these type of things. So in this crossover, they had Tom Welling from Smallville.
From Smallville.
And they had him in the Smallville setting and explained him as he gave up his powers to be normal. So
Gold Kryptonite or something like that? Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, I don't remember. Okay. But I remember the show. It was just, totally not even connected. They didn't have to connect that at all, and they did.
That's very cool.
They had the Flash from the Justice League movie in here.
Wonderful.
And he even talked about some of the stuff that kind of hinted at the movie, which that was super.
Okay.
But on top of that, they had Marv Wolfman do a cameo.
Oh, man. And him and George Perez did such great work on the series. Oh, that's so cool.
But most people wouldn't know it, you know, wouldn't know who it was.
Yeah.
They had Burt Ward do a cameo.
Oh,
and he even said something like, "Oh, infinite great disasters," or something like that. And
exactly that. Instead of holy. Oh, that's great.
Will Wheaton was in it. Not that he had a character, but he was in it for a brief cameo.
That's so respectful, and that's so sweet. And that's so, you know what I mean? How cool is that? All right.
Total fan service all the way, but we were eating it up. And they had, they had glimpses of the Doom Patrol in there. They had glimpses of Titans, both from the HBO shows.
Exactly.
You know, they just tried to, they had Swamp Thing. Yeah. So, I mean, it's all
that
in
Alan
there.
Moore run on Swamp Thing, one of the best series of comics ever done.
Colin Atzmall, he looked for him. Yeah. So the story itself is true to the original. I mean, they're not trying to duplicate the comic on screen. And there were changes, like who was Harbinger, who was Pariah. Those were different characters. They used characters from the show.
Okay.
Instead of some new character, which I thought was perfect.
Right. And they've done that throughout too, that the secret identities are different than who they were in the comics or whatever. Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think they did really good. They brought the Legends into it. And I don't know if you've watched Legends at all.
I've only seen the first two seasons and I'm not sure why I didn't continue, but I want to. It's just that I haven't. So there's so much.
my favorite character is Rory Cold. He's like so great. And a little bit of a spoiler. It doesn't give everything away, but maybe this will entice you a little bit. Mm-hmm. But he started writing a novel and kept it secret from everybody.
Okay.
But it's a like erotic romance novel, and he writes it under Rebecca.
That's hilarious. Okay. Yes.
So he's at a book signing and everyone's calling him Rebecca, which is hilarious because he's this big gruff guy, you know.
Right,
so,
exactly.
Bebo was in the episodes.
Wow.
You haven't seen Bebo on the that was a character from Legends. They brought him into this whole thing.
Okay.
So I have a big spoiler that happens at the end. Do you want to hear it?
No, because it wouldn't only be me hearing it. It would be all of our listeners, and they would they would come at you with axes and torches. So
if you've watched the show, the end of it, what they do with the Diggle character will make you pump your arms. So
fantastic. You know,
you really should go watch.
So one of the things is I'm not only behind on Legends of Tomorrow, I'm at least a season behind on multiple of those. And if it really builds to each time that I have watched like a big crossover or climax and I was behind on something else, I really regretted it because I love how they do that. They tie everything together. They answer all your questions. And so I kind of want to, like, now I got my roster. I have to watch all five seasons to get to this, and yes. that'll be my big climax, my big payoff. Yes. But I can't just go jump into it because it won't be as good. I really wanted to build to that amazing mountain of goodness. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. So, and I hate to put it on you, but really, if you watch all the episodes leading up to it, you get the most out of it. Partly because you come to understand the characters, yeah. especially like Oliver Queen. It's difficult to just jump in and watch it and care to see what he does in the crisis if you haven't watched everything, you know, 8-7 seasons.
one of the things, episodic TV has really acquired that compared to movies nowadays. It used to be that if you wanted something big and spectacular, you wanted that 2.5 hour big screen, etc. But nowadays, when you really can do a series of 10, 13 episodes, and you have 13 hours to tell your story, like Watchmen the series versus Watchmen the movie, they really can go into more. The Boys is about to have season 2, and The Boys is, you know, just such an expansion on the comic books. It's much the same, but you really can let things breathe a little bit. You can bring in more and let the tension build and let the laughter roll, and there's just more to it than having to compress it. And I've always admired the craft of being able to tell a big story in 2.5 hours. But I really do like sometimes things jump the shark is not quite the right term, but when they have 2 hours of story to tell and they make it 10 hours, then that sucks. Then it drags. Then it's like, well, what does that matter? That's a whole unnecessary side plot. And so there's craft that goes with each one of those things. And especially, I don't know, going back to the days of serials, they always ended on a kind of a cliffhanger to get you to watch the next installment. And TV has been very good about that. Ongoing series, X-Files and so forth, they almost always had something unresolved at the end. They very, very rarely tied things off with a bow. And now when they actually do have a whole series that's like that, they're very good at the pacing of it, the story arcs, the story beats, as they say, in the industry. They've really become proficient at this is going to be a satisfying experience all the way through. You know what I mean? So,
and I loved everything with the Marvel Universe and build up and Infinity War and Endgame. That, I mean, that's going to be very hard for anybody to duplicate 10 years worth of the MCU and then those last two movies.
You're right.
If you just see those last two movies, they don't mean hardly anything. Oh, that was a good movie. You know,
right. It's got to be that you fall in love with the characters and care about them enough before you see, oh no, he might not make it through and that kind of stuff. Exactly.
And I will say, even though it's a much smaller budget, I think this DC universe buildup and everything they did to get to this Crisis on Infinite Earths has just as much effect on me as the Endgame for $400 billion or whatever they, you know.
That's really cool.
I think it was that good. I would sit down and watch those 5 hours over again.
Yeah, to catch everything, to enjoy it again. Exactly. Yes. I will say this, sorry, compared to great names like Thanos and Darkseid, Monitor, Anti-Monitor, they're nothing. Couldn't they come up with something more bigger, better, more dangerous? I don't know. They're not omniscient enough. You know what I mean?
They joke about that in the shows. Every time somebody says Anti-Monitor, somebody else goes, really? That's the name? That kind of sucks.
Honestly, exactly. So at least there are enough fans that they have the same, you know, feeling that I have of, oh, they just went, that's silly.
Yeah. Harbinger and Pariah, those are pretty good.
Okay.
But Pariah always confused me a little bit about, you know, he just seemed to be there. And I was like, I don't know why he's completely there.
But. Yeah. Sometimes they have characters that are just there to be like the exposition. You know, they're going to tell you their story and that ties into why this is all going on. But they're kind of like, they're the chorus in Shakespearean terms, where they're going to share some part of the story. They're not in the story. You know what I mean? Yeah.
But the good thing is now they are all on the same Earth, and that and they included Black Lightning too.
And
that was like pretty impressive that they brought him into it.
Yeah.
So literally all of them are coming into the same Earth, same universe.
Well, we'll see. As you know, the DC universe, when they handled that, it created all kinds of interesting and sometimes awkward plots of, well, now you got like one too many Supergirls, one too many, Mr. Terrifics or whatever else it might be.
Oh, that's the other thing that I was like cheering about. So they had the Superman that's been on Supergirl. Mm-hmm. But you know who else they brought back as Superman? Brandon Routh. They had him in his Superman outfit from that world. So they had Adam from Legends meet Superman. And he's like, wow, I'm a super guy. And it was hilarious. He plays it so well.
I said,
I bet he never thought he'd put on that Superman suit again.
Exactly. So did they have anybody like Dean Cain didn't show up? You know what I mean? Like who got left out?
He has been in Supergirl as Supergirl's dad, but Cadmus made him disappear.
Okay. So, see, that's I need to watch. I need to find out what happened to all that. Okay, that's very cool.
Yeah, there's a lot of people.
I'm sorry, I lost you again.
There have been a whole lot of people from past everything.
Okay. All right. Good session. We talked about a ton, as usual.
Yeah. So, all right, Al. Well, I am going to go look up some of these comedians to listen to while I'm working today.
Stuart McLean for me. Exactly that. Thank you very much for that gift. That's fantastic.
Yeah. Okay. Let me know what you think of him, because I think he's fantastic.
Very good.
You can look for some of his shows they released like on podcast. So I think he had a podcast. You could go back and get some of the old shows because he died last year, unfortunately.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. I had been listening to him for a while and stuff and knew he had a show. So I finally said, hey, I'm going to look up to see if they have his show that I could listen to old episodes, radio broadcast, you know, and I found a podcast that every week they released his show. And I looked and I said, oh, the last one was a month ago.
Right. Well, new episodes coming out.
Yeah. So I'm like 1 month late on catching new stuff.
Yep. So. Yep. Okay.
All right, man. All right. Take care.
Okay. See you in a week.
Happy late birthday.
Okay. Well, bye.
You have been listening to the Relentless Geekery Podcast. Come back next week and join Alan and Steven's conversation on geek topics of the week.